The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.
So we'd like to welcome you to Freedom 106.5 FM. You could tell us a little bit about yourself. You are a clinical psychologist, and I would believe to deal with addictions. Or what is your sphere of practice?
Well, as you said, Jefferson Drouin, I'm a clinical psychologist. I have some substantial training in relation to substance use, addictions, and mental health as well.
So let's start off with the very first question. What is addiction and substance use disorders, SUDs?
In common language, we tend to use addiction and substance use disorders synonymously. But it is not. The authorities are very clear on that. The authorities that is used by mental health professionals, such as psychologists, psychiatrists, is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. All right, in that manual doesn't speak of addiction. Neither does that manual speak about substance abuse or substance dependence. In fact, they have integrated those two terms, and it is now substance use disorder, which is now categorized as a spectrum disorder, meaning that you could be anywhere in the spectrum from mild, moderate, and severe. So the substance use disorder actually has 11 characteristics clinically. So if you satisfy two of the characteristics, it will be mild. Three or four. Four, it will be moderate. Five and more, it will be severe. And those characteristics, they are pegged into four different subheadings, like impaired control, social impairment, risky use, and there are some pharmacological terms as well. But I don't want the listeners to believe that the DSM only spoke about substance use disorder. I didn't think about other behaviors that could be classified as disorders as well. Because the DSM also speak to gambling and the gambling disorder as well. All right. And there are a host of other behaviors or habits that if you think about it, could be classified as behavior disorders as well. So it could be gambling, it could be food, it could be internet, it could be shopping, it could be risk-taking behaviors, you know, it could be pornography. So there are a lot of, so while the DSM speak about substance use disorder in relation to a range of substances, they also speak also to behavior disorder as well.
I'm sure that you mentioned a few that persons would not think are addictions in that list that you just called there. How do we determine that someone has a substance use problem?
Okay, let's give me 1 second here. Let me fix the technology. 1 second.
All right. So while we give that 1 second to Mr. Drouin, I think I can quickly read some of your messages as it pertains to some of the questions coming in. At 3061065. One says, tell me something. After all this comes to an end, will the U.S. military be staying? I read that one. Yeah, and that was one of my questions as well. Really? Oh, looking forward to one of your next Love Connection programs. That was the very best program you ever had. It brought out the softer side of people. Well, send a topic now, since we want to talk about love. Probably we could do that on Friday. Who knows? Send a topic now. All right, as we wait for Mr. Drouin to rejoin us here at Freedom 106.5 FM as we try to rectify some technical issues that are occurring. All right, in other statements, other messages to 3061065, let's take in another voice note if we can, or Mr. Joanne?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, so we ready?
Yes, so you asked me, what are some of my indicators that may demonstrate that the individual may have a substance issue?
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at impaired control. Mm-hmm. Individuals may begin to use, and the intention was to go and take one drink or one smoke, or two drink and two smokes, and they continue unabatedly for extended periods. Individual may recognize that, you know, they're drinking too much, or they're smoking too much, or they're taking too much of prescription medication, and they themselves may say, you know what, let me try to cut down. And effort was in vain, they are unable to do that. Individual may spend a lot of time in obtaining the substance. They may borrow, they may steal, they may sell things to get the substance. In addition to that, the crave or the urge to use is substantial. In addition to that, there are some social issues that may present itself as well. For instance, people who drink and smoke all day today and may not be able to go to work in the morning. Students may not be able to go to university or go to school. They may not be able to execute their duties at home as well. And despite all these continuous problems, individuals continue to use. Even though we see in occupational issues, we see in interpersonal issues, individuals continue to use. You know, even let's talk about family situation where, you know, they may have churches, they may have to go to a wedding, they may have to go to some function, and the substance user in that situation will make an excuse. They may not want to go, you know, they're not feeling well, so they are unable, you know, to live up to the expectation of the family member because of the substance use that actually. Individuals begin to drink and smoke anywhere. You're on the road, you're in the pub, you're on the block. There's a lot of risky behavior associated. In addition to that, realize now that tuberculosis and other respiratory infections are becoming more prevalent and predominant among drug and substance users. You know, so recently we had a couple of cases of tuberculosis as well, in addition to other respiratory illnesses. So it's risky behavior as well. And as individuals continue to use more and more of these substance, pharmacological issues present itself, such as tolerance. Obviously, the more you use, you may start to use it one beer, two beers, and eventually your tolerance has grown now. You know, you want to see 14 on the table and 16 on the table. You want to see a case of beer on the table. But your tolerance now, your tolerance for consuming a higher level of alcohol or smoking more crack or smoking more marijuana or taking more prescription drugs has increased, your tolerance level has increased. And obviously, after all these drugs you have used, the phenomena of withdrawal come into play now, that the body now will have, after all that intensive usage, you know, after you use now, you're feeling of depression, loneliness, fluctuation of moods, you know, nausea, loss of appetite, loss of sleep, little anxiety, little depression, right? So all those phenomena I indicated to you fall under the different categories of impaired control, social impairment, risky use, and pharmacological criteria. Now, what I said to you before is that the criteria is a spectrum disorder. So 1 to 2 criteria is mild, 3 to 5 is moderate, and 6 and more would be severe. So we use those criteria in our intervention with the individual to determine if an individual is afflicted with substance use disorder and how bad that person is to the extent.
All right, and why is addiction still so heavily stigmatized and how can it prevent people from getting help?
Right. But before you go to that, I just want to stick something in for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want us to just go away feeling that we only talk about alcohol and cocaine and marijuana. There are different classifications of substances. There are 9 different classifications of substances for which individuals could be diagnosed with substance use disorders. It could be alcohol use, opioid use, stimulant use, cannabis use, sedative use, tobacco and nicotine, hallucinogens, inhalants such as painkillers and glue, and caffeine, most very important, right? So there are 9 other categories for which an individual could be classified as a substance use disorder.
Mm.
Are you actually smiling like you?
No, you said the word glue just now, and I'm trying to figure out why would just the smell of glue would kind of make me exit the room, you know? Paint, when we paint in for Christmas and stuff like that, I can't handle the paint smell. You thinking about inhaling tinners, you know?
Well, actually, it induces a feeling of euphoria. That good feeling of excitation and pleasure. Strange to you, but it happens.
Mm.
All right? People do it and do it very frequently. But many people do it, they hardly do it by itself, but they do it in combination with other things as well. There's a term that you use, polydrug use. That's where poly means many.
Mm-hmm.
Use more than one substance. So you have your glue, you have your alcohol, you have your little cannabis, you know?
Mm.
So more and more people hardly use one substance. So they use things in combination now. So yes, it answers your question. So back to your question of stigma, all right?
Yeah.
So when we use the term stigma, what are we talking about? I really want to define that. It really has to do with a kind of negative attitude, you know, a kind of belief, all right, or kind of discriminatory way of operating with people associated with substance use.
Hmm.
Now, people afflicted with the disorder. Before I move forward, I just want to state emphatically, I didn't say it before, but substance use disorder, according to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, is a mental disorder. So the people are not well. Individuals do not set off to be a substance abuser. They do not get up one day and say, "You know what? I will use drugs, you know, until I become unmanageable." It happens. So actually, it is a brain disorder. It affects the mind and the brain. All right, and individuals that don't actually choose to go out and actually be a person afflicted with the disorder. This stigma really comes from the misconception that substance use disorder is a personal choice. That is a moral failing. It is a spiritual lash, right? And not recognizing that substance use disorder is a psychological / mental condition. And it is treatable, it is progressive, it is chronic, and it is highly relapsible when you contrast it with things like diabetes or hypertension. But treatment is available. So people, we're still in that mode where we believe that these people they made their choice, and it's a moral failing, and the wicked, the bad, the ugly, and they choose that lifestyle to abandon the work, not, you know, don't see about their family, you know, borrow money, end up in prison. But it is not. There are people who really and truly they have lost the capacity to make decisions and, you know, to solve problems. And I stick this a piece of psychological slant here for you, in that, remember, drug use affects one of the major organs in the body, which is the brain. And that part of the brain that is responsible for decision making and impulse control and problem solving, all right, and logical choices. The more individuals use, is the more individuals damage those areas of the brain over and over, constant usage, repetitive usage, damage those areas of the being and leave the people without those skills to manage areas of their life. So they really become, they reach a point where really and truly the choice, they make the choice to stop, but the sustenance of that choice to stay stopped independently without any other help become very difficult. Because of the substantial damage that they have endured over the years due to their neurological impact.
And how can family, friends, and co-workers assist individuals who have a SUD?
A substance use disorder.
Substance use disorder,
Right. I want to state that understanding and empathy of the individual and their situation becomes very important. The family recognizing what is happening to the individual and bringing the individual to the point where they may at least want to talk to somebody to make a diagnosis or to make a conclusion in relation to exactly what happened to them. At this point, I want to say to you that substance use disorder overlap with mental illnesses as well. So many times, even though the person presented with mental illness, there may be other mental challenges that the person may experience as well. So my first suggestion is, let's demonstrate some empathy, let's demonstrate some compassion, some understanding, and try to seek professional assistance in getting an assessment in determining what's happening with that individual. At the same time, I will encourage families to continue. Once they suspect substance use, they themselves make their contact and they do some read up as well and some research and look and check and see what is happening to the family member and see how they could explain those characteristics or symptoms to the helpers so they be able to have a little better understanding of what's happening to them. Now, a support group for families is important as well, even though the individual who is using whatever substance doesn't want to access treatment or doesn't want to seek help or doesn't want to go for an assessment. There are a lot of options for families to go and join the self-help groups, right? Where they could get their support, where they could get some explanation, they could get some understanding of what is happening, and they as well, they can get help as well, and they may get direction in terms of how to support their family member.
And finally, what are the treatments and support options in Trinidad and Tobago for persons struggling with addiction?
There is a host. We are aware of NADAP, the National Alcohol and Drug Abuse Prevention Program. NADAP is the agency that is connected to all the other treatment facilities in the country, and it is a facility that people could they could call to get further information. But there are other treatment facilities as well. You have the CORA facility, the Substance Abuse Prevention Treatment Center at CORA.
Mm-hmm.
We do have the clinics on Tuesdays and Thursdays. You like New Life Ministries in St. Augustine. You have Rebirth House, which is well known on Charlotte Street in Port of Spain. And I can't help but say the female facility as well in Serenity Place. All right, I think that is in Cochrane Village. And also the New Life Ministries also have a facility for females as well. Very important. But then there's another facility as well as Heal facility as well. So there are rehabilitation centers that people can access if they want rehabilitation. But just remember, every individual who may demonstrate features of substance, you need rehabilitation. All right, depending on how many features you present with, individuals counseling can help you, any meetings can help you, AA meetings can help you, going to support groups can help you. All right, so rehab really is when really and truly you reach a point where now nothing else is working. So you need to go now, go into rehab, you know, spend some time now and try to see how best you could clean up your act and learn some skills and come back out after 3 months, 6 months, or the 9 months program, depending on the institution.
Well, Mr. Joan, we're perilously close to the news. Any last tips that you would like to give persons listening right now who may know individuals who are suffering from SUDs, which is substance use disorders? And you did say that there was a correlation between addiction and SUDs, yes?
I am saying there's a correlation between substance use disorder and mental and other psychiatric conditions, mm-hmm. like schizophrenia and bipolar.
Okay.
My suggestion is mental health is the cornerstone of individuals' wellness and well-being. Substance use is a mental health phenomenon. Individuals should try to seek help, and all the agencies that I mentioned to you, if you could connect with the Psychological Association, I will send an email to you with all the treatment facilities, so you could have it there. So you could, you could, in terms of your audience, if they want to call and whatever, you'll have that there.
I'll give that information. Yeah.
Yes, you could. Yes, you could.
I appreciate you taking the time, Mr. Joanna. I know the technical difficulties had us a little up and down, appreciate you taking the time.
It's a pleasure. It has been a pleasure, madam.
Take care.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.